If you're ready to confront your destiny, if this is the moment that you've been praying for, tune in and listen to your cosmic cheerleader, Commander Lady Athena, for cosmic pep talks for closet Christs. The show is the voice of the Ashtar Command. The call is for you to step forward into your greatness. Be listening on Wednesday. We have an appointment with destiny.
Greetings in the divine love and presence of the one divine life. I'm Commander Lady Athena, and you're listening to the voice of the Ashtar Command, Cosmic Pep Talks for Closet Christs. What is a closet Christ? It is the divine you, closeted in self-imposed limitation. And so these seminars each week are an evocative impetus to draw you forth from that closeted state so that you can walk the earth ascended, whole, and free right now, not in some future date, because in highest truth you've never left the heart of God. So you don't have to return anything but your mind. So tonight, our seminar topic is the dynamics of resistance and surrender. So if you're ready, take a deep breath and surrender yourself to this moment, right here and right now. Take another deep breath and integrate from the highest divine realms all the way down into your physical persona. The totality of your being as you can bring it in at this time. Deep breath. Integrate, align, marriage all levels of yourself into that one unified whole that we call the Atma. So the spiritual path could rightly be defined, I think, as the journey from resistance to surrender. So let me ask you, where are you right now in your journey? Are you completely at peace and at one with this moment? Scan your energies and see if you notice any resistance, any trace of unhappiness or discomfort right in this moment. Are you living a surrendered life, wholly yielded to the divine spirit within you? Are you self-actualized, self-aware, and conscious of present eternal being? Do you find any of these questions difficult to relate to? The path of awakening is always the path of self-scrutiny and the contemplation of essential being. Who are you? What is your life about? What would you like it to be about? What do you fear that it's not about? What do you resist in that process? I think most of us seek a life that is spiritually oriented and directed and flowing in divine grace. And yet realizing this to where it is actually the state one lives in at all times requires one's effort and commitment. Moreover, it requires actively moving your awareness consciously into that higher state of awareness. Most people are very passive. They're waiting for their guru or Ashtar to beam them up, or the dimensional shift, or something outside of themselves supernaturally to come in and shift them. But, beloveds, nothing is preventing you but the activating and moving of your awareness. And only you can choose where your awareness is parked. Right now, what are you aware of? What are you aware of? Hopefully, the voice that's speaking. Because that's the only thing that's happening in this moment. But very seldom are we present in the present moment. And spirit meets you in the moment. Not in the future, not in the past. Those don't even exist except as you recall them mentally. Spirit is present now. And you either move with it, or you're sitting there waiting for something to happen. If you're waiting, you're certainly feeling a lot of frustration. Because all those dates come and go where everyone says, oh, there's going to be the whatever, whatever wave of ascension. Or this is going to happen, or that's going to happen. And you wake up in the same dilemma the next morning. It's like, well, where did I miss the boat or the train or the spaceship here? So all of those things are imaginative scenarios conjured up by the part of you that really is more fond of fantasy than reality. So why don't you let go of all those storylines of becomingness, one day, whatever, and just be present here and now. Be present with God in this second. So I want to look at what the major block to experiencing this kind of higher life, what is it? What is this major block to a life more consciously proactive and divinely empowered? And you know, it's real simple. It's defined with one word. The major barrier is resistance. Know that the false self resists self-awareness. It wants to keep you so involved in the world and in its noise and folderol that you don't have time to even look at yourself. You don't have any respite from the constant demands that the world places on your intention and your involvement. So resistance is the default setting of this false self, this false sense of self, which has been called the egoic state, or ego mind, or simply the mind, the lower mind. Resistance to what? Resistance to truth, to reality, to everything that causes your awakening and ego's dissolution. So the ego is an energetic of entangled thoughts, desires, attachments, aversions, and programmed limitations from countless lifetimes of habitual response out of a fictional self. And the only one that can address that is you, because you were the participant in that. Part of this program limitation is the belief in birth, aging, disease, death, and all of the forms of limitation. We have all of these beliefs around how things are. Beliefs about how the world operates, what the world is, what we have to do to have, quote, health, what we have to do to have, quote, abundance. We're full of all this programmed information, and not a single shred of it is accurate and true. Why? Because it changes. Truth, with a capital T, is Satyam. It is Sat. It is that which is, which changes not. It is the eternal nowness of the perfection and wholeness of the Absolute. So, the ego generates all this scenario in which it questions, it doubts, mocks, ridicules, persecutes, and seeks to destroy and silence every bearer of light and revealer of truth, including you and me. So, it is the collective ego force that fuels and perpetrates every totalitarian fascist regime, every terrorist group, every act of hatred, violence, cruelty, and murder is fueled by this collective ego force. But that can only be addressed individually. That's where we have to take, if we care to, have to take conscious responsibility for our state. What state do you live in? Are you living in an unconscious, ego-driven state where you're just a puppet of your past, your karma? Or are you walking in conscious self-election, conscious self-awareness? Good questions, huh? So the ego is not your friend. Get this clearly. The ego is not your friend, ever. Its sole objective is to kill you and destroy your destiny and your present life. So it's the ego force that fuels every addiction and prompts every suicide. Got to really look at this carefully if you want to step free. So the ego is the force of falsehood, the father of lies, the accuser, the antichrist spirit, the devil, Satan, the call power. It's been called all those things. And ego has taken form as the lower localized time-bound sense of self, that mind-projected identity that totally identifies with separation, difference, enemies, adversaries, duality, and is false evidence appearing real, i.e. fear. It is the very energetic of fear. The very energetic of separation. And in highest truth, it never happened. It's not real. It's a fiction. It's a phantom. But because we believe it is who we are, we have projected identity into it life after life after life. It has become a giant dweller on the threshold of our reality. The angel at the gate, or the demon at the gate, as it will. That thing that chases you in your dreams. It is that part of the unhealed, unaddressed, unexamined, unrevealed, undisclosed self. The undermining self, the false self. And what you're seeing right now on the planet is the outpouring of the spirit of divine revelation upon all flesh, and all the stuff's coming up. The squeeze has been put upon the collective. And all of that yucky stuff is coming up. And what are we to do with it? We are to see through it, beyond it, and to transmute it through the power of our soulific gaze. The light of eternity, of the all that is, of the supreme absolute, pours through the divine portals of your eyes, both the inner eye and the outer eyes, so that when you look upon devastation and say, "This is not real. Be gone, you phantom. You ugly depiction. You have no power to dissuade me from knowing the love of God, that nothing and no one can touch or hide." That is the state we need to get to, where we confront illusion without fear, as a spiritual warrior. Because the gaze is like an arrow that pierces the darkness, a flaming arrow that illumines a pathway through which you can walk in the light of greater awareness. And that which is as like a fog, a mist, simply has to part with the advance of your light. What light? You have the courage to look and see what's there, without denial, without resistance, without fear, without mood-making, without escape through some fantasy or some distraction. You just stand in the light of higher awareness and look. Yeah, that's it. That's all you have to do. That's all you have to do. So another thing, the ego is the only part of us that ever dies. Get this clearly in your mind. You are birthless and deathless. Only a fiction, a belief in separation, believes it's born, believes it grows old, and believes it dies. So, of course, fiction has a termination point. It has to die. It's a good thing that it does. The ego is the whole history that you've identified with as yourself. It's all your storyline. It's all your past pain recalled. It's all the vainglorious things you took authorship for, when the spirit of the absolute is the only energetic that animates all life. Yet you think you have authored some actions. You think you own some property. You think the stuff around you is yours. And it's the attachment and the identification with that. All of that goes when the ego dies. What happens to you? Your radiance, your truth remains untouched, unmarred. It's always been one with God. It will always be one with God. So what happens after death? Well, if you have awakened, if you're soul aware, you will simply move forward in service, in some form that you enjoy. If you like to teach and work with people, you'll be teaching and working with people. Or you may just choose to merge into the absolute. There's unlimited choice at that level. So what part does not go with you? Your brain, your body, your emotions, your thoughts, your attachments, your fears, your anxieties, your mortgage, your bills, your problems. But what happens if you've identified so much with that, and you're so attached to that, that earns you a ticket back to Earth to repeat another immersion in time, space, and illusion. That's all. You won't remember it. You didn't remember before coming here, did you? Very few of you do. So what's to worry? You get to come back as many times as you think there's something here to be gotten, to be earned, to be achieved, to be attained. Some label that you'd like to wear, some experience that you'd like to have. All of that is had here in the realm of illusion, the holodeck, Star Trek holodeck, whatever. So if you want that, it's there. But if you can step into the clear light of being, you will not return here. Why? Because you have no attachment here. If you've lived free, you have nothing to draw you back here. So don't even identify with being a servant, a bodhisattva, a saint, a guru, Don't even identify with being a teacher. Because bodhisattvas and gurus tend to come back. One of those is speaking to you right now, so I know through direct experience. The doer has to die. The person that thinks it's doing anything has to die. The person that thinks has to die. What is that person? The false self. What lives eternally? Eternal existence, omnipresent awareness, and bliss, ananda. Sat, chit, ananda. That's what remains. That's what remains. And it awakens as the all that is in the all that is. So it's not a obliteration of selfhood at all. You take within your chalice all the accumulations of the truly spiritually evoked acts that you've ever accomplished. They're like golden treasure that you have amassed in life after life. You don't lose that. You don't lose the distilled essence of your spiritual experiences. Your experiences in life. There's a permanent atom, which is like a little bank account, on each of the levels that keeps that safe for you. So you don't lose the things of value. You only lose the falsehood. The ego is the only part of us that ever dies. So ego is a very energy of resistance. Resistance to life. Resistance to spirit. Resistance to kinship with all life. And most definitely, resistance to oneness. Now, to experience the energy force of ego is very simple. Just notice the uptight feelings in your body, especially your solar plexus, the next time someone challenges your position on some issue, or calls into question your authority, or beliefs, or personal integrity. Yeah, that's a feeling. It's one that every single one of us is very familiar with. That uptight tummy, that clenched jaw, those bulging veins in your neck, that red face. Oh, yes. That's the energy of ego. So resistance, ego, and negativity are practically identical in vibration. And all negativity comes from resistance in some form. Now, I'm sharing things with you that a little observation will clearly prove to you. So I'm really just validating and pointing out areas to look at. So you gain your own direct experience and you're not just listening and believing what someone's saying. That's not going to do anything for you. Spirituality must be grounded in direct experience, or it just sits in the mental plane or the astral plane as some theory, something you read in a book, something you agree with. But until it becomes a living reality that lives through you, in you, as you, 24/7, it's not been appropriated. It's not been integrated. It's floating around in one of your other subtle bodies. But it hasn't gotten down into your blue jeans yet, to your Levi's, into your loafers, into your sneakers. It's got to get down. It's got to land. And it can only land through your conscious evocation and integration and intense desire to be. Be what? To be free. To be free. So the ego form could vary. This resistance could vary from mild irritation, impatience, frustration, depression, sullen withdrawal, resentment, all the way to blind murderous rage and insanity. And the ego is always insane. It's always dysfunctional, self-sabotaging, and self-loathing. Even if it's sane self-aggrandizement, it's simply setting you up for the fall. It's setting you up. It's the carrot in front of the donkey that says, oh, if I can just marry my soulmate, I don't care that he or she is married to someone else, I have to be with that person. Or if I can just make so much money, then I can do my mission. Or after Ashtar beams me up in a spaceship, I'll be changed and beamed back as an ascended master. You see the storylines the ego makes up? The yarn it spins? It's always got an elaborate mythology of how it came to be. All of the mythologies you read, bar none, are the ego's explanation for its existence, which is really a non-existence that never happened. Isn't it interesting? So it's the ego that expresses as low self-esteem, as well as arrogance, pride, and a sense of superiority, be it intellectual or spiritual or athletic or any other way where you think you're better than anyone else. It's that energy of thinking you're better or lesser. That's the ego. So this false self wants to keep you self-focused upon the personal, the trivial, to distract you from awakening to your true, divine, omniversal, absolute self. To awaken beyond its vice-like grip on your life is to realize that it announces its presence. It announces its presence as resisting ego force. How? Through unhappiness in some form, accompanied by complaining and blaming. The ego's always got to have somebody to point the finger of blame to. Some victimizer. So to begin, the ego's dissolution is really simple. I've gone into it before, but it bears repeating until we really, really get it. And it's to practice conscious self-monitoring, to where you're vigilant over every appearance of unhappiness. Realize this is the ego's way of announcing its resistance to what is. This present moment isness, which the ego absolutely can't tolerate. The ego is resisting the present nowness, for the ego cannot exist in the now. Ego and spirit can't live in the same nowness. So as soon as you come into the now, you're in the presence of spirit. And ego can't stand in that place. It must recall past pain or project future problems and worries in order to survive. It cannot allow you to be still and quiet and content. It depends upon drama and conflict for its very existence. So instead of joining into the unconscious ego mind's mood-making scenario, you simply stop and observe it and refrain from reacting. In that, you begin its dissolution. Just that simple. You've busted it. You've outed it. Game's up. You can see its shenanigans when they're on their way, and you head them off at the pass. So you starve the ego from the very food it requires, which is negative reactions of aggression, defense, resisting, whatever. And you begin to use your daily life as an ongoing spiritual practice. You're relentless. You never stop for a minute. Everything is a stepping stone to greater, greater awareness. And you begin to exercise conscious self-direction, rather than simply allowing old egoic problems to automatically run your life. The ego is entirely unconscious, so it requires your remaining conscious. Whenever you go into unconscious mode, you're in ego mode, and old, unhealed programs are running you. You're not even here. You're not even present. You, as soul, are backed off watching this nonsense, hoping that the conscious self will wake up enough to ask for some divine direction. That's where you have to ask, seek, and knock. So you pay attention to staying present here and now in whatever you're doing. You keep your mind focused upon completing the task at hand with full present awareness. Whatever you're doing, no task is devoid of present divinity, of present presence. So when you stay present with your action, bringing it forward into completion and full participation, this develops impeccability and excellence in your creative expression. And you'll notice that in every mastered soul, self-mastered soul, they bring forward this impeccability and excellence in even the smallest details of their life. Physically, this might look like order, paying attention to details, keeping current with your bills, taking care of your responsibilities, fulfilling your dharma, your rightful engagement with life. It might look like a lot of things. It might look like being really attentive to seeing how you can brighten another person's day, bring happiness wherever you go. Make everyone feel better because you were there. Not with an agenda, but simply because it's the natural state of your radiant being. You're a force for healing, for reconciliation, for balance, for harmonization, wherever you go. It's who you are. It's what happens when you're integrated with your true self. So the state of alert present moment awareness creates what's been called as presence with a capital P. And presence develops from your fully inhabiting present moment awareness. Present moment, here and now, here and now. You know, I watched Satya Sai Baba, the great cosmic avatar, demonstrate for many years this attentive presence. And even the smallest of acts, if he was lighting up one of the oil lamps, the deepams, if he was attending to a wedding that he was presiding over, or speaking to someone, or whatever he was doing, the smallest of details, he was totally present, 100%. And when he looked at you and spoke to you, you felt like you were the only one in all of existence. And one time we asked him, because he kept moving his hand in the air, and somebody asked him, "Are you thinking, Swami?" And Sai Baba said, "Oh, no. Swami never thinks. Swami is talking to them, other life, other worlds. You see, Swami is talking to you who are sitting here now, but Swami is also talking to universes and worlds and other beings everywhere." And yet at the same time, he was totally present with us, cutting jokes and telling us the smallest details of our life, things that we haven't even told our mother or our best friend. He knew everything, not to embarrass. He wouldn't do it that way, except in a private interview, then he would. But in a group interview, no. He'd usually talk indirectly. He'd talk to someone else to whom it didn't apply, but you knew it was directed to you. That's how that works. So he, at the same time he was with us, was also omnipresent, in full God consciousness, expressing and experiencing himself as the indweller and animator of all life forms. So the avatar always embodies the next step of progression for the highest human level of attainment in the next cycle. And Satya Sai Baba came to set the template in place for the Golden Age, which some have termed the Seventh Golden Age. And it has been set in motion, it has been anchored, and will be fully present on the planet by somewhere in the next few years. Some say 2022, 2024, and some say even sooner. It's present now. It's just waiting for many of us to catch up with it, to enter it by conscious volition and activation and putting ourselves there. So begin practicing. The next time you feel a negative reaction coming upon you, a nasty retort, a smart remark, a sarcasm, a cutting jab, a nasty post, a complaint, that you're just coming from falsehood and ego. Just stop it. That need to defend yourself or your position or your assumed rightness. Just stop. And instead, whenever you feel that uptightness, stop and go silent. In mid-argument, if necessary. In mid-reaction, just stop and go silent. And just watch all the negative energy fizzle out and be diffused by your conscious presence. You awoke in that moment. And because you came present in spirit, the falsehood had to depart like a shadow. So regard your presence as God arriving on the scene. God lives in you as conscious awareness, as presence. So you build presence each time you succeed in ceasing to lend energy to negativity, resistance, reaction, self-defense. And this presence builds up a shield of impenetrable divine light. And then indeed you walk in perfect protection without need to defend or protect yourself. So the egoic identity that's been added to, oh my heavens, in countless lifetimes, life after life after life, is where one has misidentified oneself and defined oneself repeatedly as depressed, angry, oppressed, enslaved, victimized, abused. We've come to identify ourselves in life after life as these states or diseased or whatever. So all of those identifications have to be personally dissolved now by this exercising of spiritual awareness in the moment that these things begin to surface. And as the Holy Spirit is poured forth on all flesh, that's really the meaning of the apocalypse. It is the great unveiling. It's the unveiling of truth, which means the flushing into the light of global awareness, all of the darkness. And then when we don't own the fact that it's our darkness that we're seeing, we point the finger of blame to somebody out there, which exists really nowhere but in our own mind. The world you see is the world you be within yourself, within your mind. There is no outer world. I know that's a big craziness to try to wrap your head around, but that's the truth. There's no outer world. There are no outer others. There is no other. There's only the self. Everything you see is another form of your own self. Yeah, everything. For it to come into your awareness, You have to have a similar resonance in your consciousness, or it would not even occur to you. You would be oblivious to it if it didn't reside as a resonance somewhere within your mind. So that's the only place that you can do your spiritual practices, in your own inner universe, in your own mind, in your own projections, in learning to look at the world as a scenario that you've invented. And you're affected by only your thoughts. If you believe it affects you, it affects you. If you believe it's real to you. So to withdraw identification and belief in these false programs is what requires your conscious vigilance, your conscious awareness. So spiritual awareness is the light of your true atmic self, which simply disperses the fog of ego like the sun. It doesn't have to be killed. It doesn't have to be transcended or ignored. You really can't. You have to dismantle your own falsehood because you are the one that created it, promoted it, invited it, empowered it life after life. It's your creation. It's the child of your consciousness. So it has to come home to Father, Mother, God in the form of you to be dissolved, to be forgiven, to be redeemed, to be absorbed into the light, and thus to find rest and home in your omnipresent, unconditional love. You become the safe space for everything that hurts to be healed and to be reimagined as whole. So until the state of enlightenment, self-realization or conscious presence is permanently established, the egoic mind will continue to present its unconscious patterns of resistance. You know, to really secure a state of enlightenment while you're in the physical body is extremely difficult. If it were not so, there'd be more consciously enlightened people walking on the planet. But many of you who have attained degrees of enlightenment in the caves and the ashrams and the cloistered monasteries have been asked to take embodiment in the modern world, so that you can really practice physically in your daily, ordinary life those yogic practices and states of awareness that you had attained in silence and solitude. Not so easy, is it? And that's our challenge, to live like a yogi while we're in the world of rogis and bogies. Rogies are sick people, and bogies are phony people, which would be us. We all are the yogi, the rogi, and the bogey, because it's only the self, right? So that recurring of the patterns of resistance, the karmic flows, the programs, that's normal. So, again, don't judge them, don't fight them, don't resist them. Just watch them. Don't identify with them. You're not ego. You're not mind. You're not these programs. You're not your past. You're not your history. You're not your previous incarnations. You're the observer, the witness, the divine gaze of the beloved regarding all, with unconditional love and acceptance, blessing it all, accepting it all, loving it all, healing it all. So just stay present and observe the patterns. Let them pass like clouds before the sun. You are the sun. Your experiences in time-space are like clouds, just passing by. That's all. That's all that's required. You're into the ego's game now. You've outed the ego. So you are no longer its unconscious puppet. So just stay present and be the light of awareness in whichever situation you find yourself in. That's it. It'll fall away. So acceptance of present moment isness is the way beyond ego resistance. You may not like the present condition, but you can always handle here and now. Life in this dream field of duality is always a combo of pleasant and unpleasant, joy and sorrow. And there's always the pairs of opposites that appear in the lower bipolar realms. Beneath Satchkhand, the plane of truth, the plane in which the soul finds its home, beneath that there's duality. In the plane of soul and up into the God realms, you don't have duality. So you have to stay in the higher regions of divine awareness to transcend being battered by the pairs of opposites, which I think and personally have experienced. You kind of have to master that middle path that the Buddha spoke about, that middle way or divine neutrality, as John Roger teaches. You have to be in that state or samadhi, equal-mindedness, as Sai Baba teaches, before you can actually transcend it. It's like you have to master your level before you can transcend it. At least that's my understanding and experience of it. So the higher altitude of conscious spiritual awareness enables you to live on the level above the phenomena of duality. You learn to live from the unified field of divine presence. And you show up each moment as the I am that I am. And you occupy the moment. You occupy the situation. You occupy the relationship. You only need to stay in present moment without resisting it in any way. You can elect to participate or not, as your wisdom dictates. And you give yourself the freedom to walk away from people and situations that are not edifying to your spirit. What does that mean? They don't feed you spiritually. If they're not strengthening you in the divine walk in which you choose to orient your life, you really have the responsibility to yourself to take care of yourself by not allowing yourself to stay in an environment that is not conducive to the state of consciousness that you wish to stabilize. So people, relationships, the various things that you lend your soul force to through attention and participation, they must earn their stay in your life. So discern what builds up your soul light, what assists you in maintaining presence, and what distracts, drains, or depletes it. Exercise observation and selectivity in what you give into your life, into your arena, into yourself, and what you lend your soul force to. Your present lifetime is extremely precious. You had to really, really elbow your way to get into this dream field this time around. And so you need to honor and value this opportunity enough to offer yourself the very best choices that are available to you. I'm aware that I have shifted several levels in sharing this with you because not everyone listening is on the same page. And so, life and the approach to these things looks different, and the teaching is slightly different in its focus and emphasis, depending upon the level of consciousness to which you are approaching it. So when you see one statement, for example, you have never been born, you've never died, and then in another statement I'm talking about how your life is very important this time around, there may seem to be a dichotomy there, but there isn't. There's no conflict if you recognize that the teaching always goes into the level that matches your receptivity. and your ability to receive. So there's no contradiction in truth, but when you get down into the teachings that apply to different stages of the mind when it's immersed in the illusion, that's where sometimes you think there's contradictions appearing in. So I want to speak about surrender, because that is the fruit that comes with consistently calling yourself to awakened presence. So surrender becomes a response to life when you accept what is present here and now without struggle, without fear or fight. You host presence by being with it peacefully, letting it teach you how to be with God, no matter what's going on. When you host presence in a conscious way, you are hosting the divine spirit. That divine spirit is always present as peace and as expanded awareness and compassion. So grace automatically accompanies the conscious hosting of presence. You experience presence every time you make a conscious decision to act on behalf of the collective good. Whenever you lose sight of personal concern and issues and payoffs and respond from your magnanimous self, you'll feel the empowerment of presence. Every time you transcend the old reactive tendencies and choose silent presence and observation, you'll feel the power of your presence build and radiate. And it feels so good, you'll soon lose all desire to react in a negative way at all. And you'll find that all of that againstness simply dissolves as if it had never been there at all, which in highest truth it hadn't. And that's the manifestation of grace and presence. So surrender is not a passive give up or giving in. It is a meeting life situations with divine confidence and empowered presence. And there is a sense of inner strength that stands up inside and fills you up, so that everything in your life must respect and yield to this. The very atoms of the universe rearrange themselves to accommodate conscious presence, because it is the presence of the living beloved of God. So problems melt away before they ever reach you. Situations balance themselves and come into divine order. And all you've done is host divine presence consciously by being present. Your present wholeness radiates healing, health, and wellness wherever you are and throughout the collective. Your presence, your aura of divine light, will affect everyone you contact on any level for good. People will get healed. Blocks will dissolve. Despair will vanish. Supply and abundance will flow. Moods will brighten simply because you were present, hosting presence here and now, flowing in acceptance, and thus bestowing grace to all. Since resistance is impossible in conscious presence, it is always inseparable from mind. So mind dissolves in the yielding of the present moment to spirit. And the dissolving of the mind is the disappearance of the world and the universe, when it just simply vanishes. And you find in highest truth, you have never left the heart of God. And a vast spaciousness fills you and fills all of the cosmos. And you are that presence. And that peace that bypasses all understanding resides within you, as you. And you find that you're in the heart of the all that is. And truly, there is naught else. And with this experience physically in the world, there is a stillness and a quiet natural state of joy, of bliss, that fills you with a great impersonal love and a kinship with all life that makes you experience home wherever you wander. Let's go out chanting. Shalom, salam, anayhu. Deep breath. Shalom, salam, anayhu. We raise our hand in blessings. May all the beings and all the worlds and all the dimensions awaken in the peace, the divine love, and the perfect joy that is eternal, the eternal state in which they have, in highest truth, never left. Adonai.